Hello and welcome to Podcast of Honor, a pro wrestling podcast dedicated solely to the best indie promotion out there in the world today, Ring of Honor Wrestling. I am your host, Shane Sloan, and I am being joined by my brother, Afton, and we are finally back with you after quite a long time with our second edition of this podcast. As many of you know who probably listen to this podcast, me and Afton also have another podcast, which we do every week, called No Gimmicks Needed Wrestling Podcast. So we don't get to do Podcast of Honor as much as we'd like to, but we do promise to continue to do this every chance we get, and this being one of those times. So to make up for the long delay, we are going to review not one, but two ROH DVDs on this edition of the podcast. We're going to be talking about Glory by Honor Night 2, which was September 16th, 2006, from the Manhattan Center in New York. And we're also going to talk about the next show, which was Survival of the Fittest 2006 from Cleveland, Ohio, which was October 6th, 2006. So both of those shows we're going to cover here on this podcast, as well as Afton will give you his top five favorite wrestlers / tag teams in Ring of Honor. But I want to start off by plugging the blog for this podcast, which is podcastofhonor.blogspot.com. And the email, which we have yet to receive any email yet, but that's okay because this podcast is just getting started. But we would love to hear from any of you Ring of Honor fans or fans of this podcast about your opinions of any DVDs that we have reviewed or any other topics we talk about here on this podcast. That email address is podcastofhonor@gmail.com. Also, as I mentioned earlier, we run a podcast called No Gimmicks Needed, where we talk about WWE and TNA and a lot more things going on in the world of mainstream professional wrestling. If you don't already listen to that podcast, check it out at nogimmickspodcast.blogspot.com. So before we get into your top five list, one more little plug to get out of the way. iTunes, as always, this podcast, just like our No Gimmicks Needed podcast, is available to you on iTunes, and we would like to please ask you to subscribe to the feed via iTunes. It's very simple. If you have iTunes on your computer, which you can download totally for free at apple.com, all you have to do is click on the very convenient iTunes button located on the blog. It will take you right to our iTunes page. Click subscribe, and then every time we do release a new episode of the podcast, and because it is very infrequent that we do get around to doing this podcast, that would be very handy for you, because as soon as a new episode comes available, you'll instantly have it downloaded to your computer right through iTunes. So there you go, just throwing that out there. So let's go ahead and get right into it. I want to hear your list, your top five list of your favorite wrestlers and tag teams in Ring of Honor today.
Kelly Primo, Seth DeLay. Okay, it's just none of those guys. Number five. And suddenly I've actually... Oh, yeah, Chris Hero. I almost forgot my own list, which is kind of embarrassing. Chris Hero in number five. Number four, Austin Aries. Number three, Christopher Daniels. Number two, Bryan Danielson. And number one, Jay and Mark, the Briscoe Brothers.
All right, well, that's a very interesting list. I like how at number five you included a member of CZW, and not even wrestling for Ring of Honor, Chris Hero.
You like to point out that it's pretty obvious that Chris Hero is a member of ROH because he's on every one of their DVDs, he's at every event.
I don't know. They always just say that, hey, you know, how the hell does he weasel his way onto all these ROH shows?
So, you guys from CZW can just magically disappear and start wrestling matches?
Well, I mean, he somehow, I guess he just attacks people, and then those people demand a match with him, and then ROH has no choice but to book him on their shows. So, anyway, we're going to talk about two DVDs today on this podcast, and I guess both of those feature pretty much everyone on your list. Your list is quite a bit different than mine, but it has some of the similar guys. I had the Briscoes on there, though not as high as you do. We both definitely enjoy the Briscoes. We both had Bryan Danielson on our list, and Austin Aries. I included Aries in with his team of Aries and Strong. I did not have Christopher Daniels on my list. I knew there was no way on earth that you would not include Christopher Daniels on yours, because you are a huge Christopher Daniels mark. And you had Chris Hero opposed to my choice of Nigel McGuinness. So, good list. We'd love to hear anyone else's who might be listening to this podcast, their top five list of wrestlers / tag teams that wrestle in ROH. And to make things clear exactly how this works, there are guys that we really like from promotions like Pro Wrestling NOAH, guys like Kenta, but we don't consider those really ROH wrestlers because they're not exactly full-time ROH wrestlers. I mean, they're just kind of visiting guys. And that's probably a list we're going to do next edition of the Podcast of Honor. We're going to do a list of our top five Ring of Honor visitors, people who work for other promotions that, have worked shows for Ring of Honor, including guys from Pro Wrestling NOAH, guys from the British promotions, FWA, though I don't know, I'm not really a huge fan, of Robbie Brookside, who wrestled on the Unified DVD, but, I mean, I guess he would be one of those guys, that would be available for that, and then even maybe guys that work for promotions like CZW during the huge CZW feud with Ring of Honor. We're actually currently
so Necro Butcher could make the list.
He could make my list, the Necro Butcher. We
why doesn't he wear shoes? Went back.
I can't afford them.
But he tells me if he takes them off before he gets in the ring.
Well, he likes, I mean, that's how
he has a little common courtesy. He didn't want to drag any mud in the ring.
Yeah, I mean, he knows they're dirty as hell because he lives in a dumpster, so he doesn't want that dirt all in the wrestling ring. But we're going back and we downloaded, purchased Death Before Dishonor, and, we're going to watch that because that was a big blow-off of the whole CZW-ROH feud. So we're currently watching that, and some of those guys from CZW may be some of the guys we include on our list of top five wrestlers that don't wrestle full-time for ROH, but who have appeared on ROH events. So look for that on the next podcast. But right now, we're going to talk about a couple of ROH DVDs that we have watched. First one being Glory by Honor Night 2. Now, last time on the podcast, we talked about Glory by Honor Night 1. This time, we're talking about Glory by Honor Night 2. This edition, night of Glory by Honor, was in a totally different location than Night 1, which was held under a tent. And the tent was one of the reasons why we give Glory by Honor Night 1 a slightly lower score than maybe we would have, because the tent pretty much got in the way of some of the wrestling that would have went on in the matches. But there, of course, was no problem with that, because they're in the Manhattan Center in New York for Glory by Honor Night 2. And this says, just in general, I think Glory by Honor Night 2 is one of the best events I've seen in ROH so far. Would you agree with that?
Definitely.
I think top to bottom, just a huge card. Obviously, Glory by Honor. This is Glory by Honor 5. So this is a show that they do every year. It's one of their bigger shows. It's kind of like the WrestleMania or, you know, SummerSlam of the ROH world.
We're still going to have to disagree a little bit. I could definitely argue that I thought that Death Before Dishonor 4 was their biggest show.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying it's the biggest show, because I mean they've got, it's just one of their big shows. Obviously, if you're equating this to the WWE, WWE has a handful of pay-per-views that I would consider, you know, tier one pay-per-views. That would be the Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, SummerSlam. I guess to some extent Survivor Series. King of the Ring used to be one, but they've discontinued King of the Ring. So these are pay-per-views that they do every year and always are really big. However, in Ring of Honor, those events would be like Glory by Honor, Death Before Dishonor, Final Battle, Night of Champions, things like that. Some of their bigger events that they've done more than once, as opposed to a event, you know, I guess you could argue Survival of the Fittest, as it has been an event they've done more than once, as opposed to an event something like, you know, Time to Man Up or, you know, Gut Check.
Wait a minute, was that the Briscoe's sponsored pay per view?
Time to Man Up was sponsored by the Briscoes. That is, of course, their catchphrase, Time to Man Up. Boy, you better man up. Those would be more like, you know, a Backlash or a, you know, Armageddon type pay-per-view or No Way Out, just kind of in-between events. So that's what I mean by saying Glory by Honor is kind of one of their top line WrestleMania, SummerSlam type level events that they run every year. So let's get into our discussion. As always, we like to do a spoiler-free discussion at first, and then we will have, at the end of the show, we will talk about a little bit of spoilers. Well, we'll have a spoiler section for those people who either don't care about spoilers or want to find out our opinions on the winners of these matches. So we won't tell you who won the match. We'll just tell you, in general, what we thought about the match, how good it was, and then at the end, we'll tell you who won and what we thought about it after kind of the show closes. So I think we're pretty well good as far as not, because we're talking about two shows at one time. Obviously, there's title matches, and there could be possible title changes. But we'll try to keep this, once again, as spoiler-free as possible as we talk about both of these cards. First, though, Glory by Honor Night 2, we're going to start off with a very good opening match. Davey Richards taking on Jack Evans. I think this was a good way to start off Glory by Honor Night 2 because both of these men are young, very talented, high-flying, you know, popular wrestlers. Dave Richards, I guess, isn't really a high flyer so much as just a hard-hitting striker. Jack Evans is definitely a high flyer, but you mix these two hot young talents together, and they put on a pretty exciting, fast-paced opening match.
Yeah, you definitely... The first match of the show has definitely got to be, I think, a fast-paced type match. Get the crowd hot. You know, you don't want to start the match with Bryan Danielson, 60-minute headlock fest. You know, that's... Although the fans might be, you know, behind that, just, I don't know, it just wouldn't be the way you'd want to start a show.
Yeah, I mean, first off, I don't know how much the fans are, you know, behind it. I think they can appreciate what Bryan Danielson's trying to do when he does do things like that. He of course pulled that on Nigel McGuinness in one match. He wrestled for several minutes, just putting variations of headlocks and chin locks on Nigel, and the fans would sarcastically, you know, cheer every time he would lock one on and chant, "This is awesome," and things like that. But yeah, I think definitely you want to start the show off with a bang. You really want to get the crowd hot. You want to get them into the show. And then you can throw in some, you know, you want to kind of start it off hot, and then you kind of have matches in there that will slow the pace down some, and then, you know, obviously your main event, you want to have it as, you know, a big, you know, blow-off match. You don't want to put all your slow, lesser-tier matches at the beginning and then have all your good matches at the end, because then it'd be unbalanced. You want to try to balance things out. But, yeah, I think we both agree this is a good way to start the show. Next up, there was a special ceremony for wrestling legend Bruno Sammartino, which saw the ROH locker room surround the ring, and Bruno addressed the fans in the arena and basically just told them how much he...
Let's get this straight. Yeah, I couldn't hear him hardly.
Well, that is one of the problems with Ring of Honor, is they don't exactly have the greatest production values, and the way they record the audio for these interviews is just, you know, whatever the microphone on the camera or whatever picks up, and oftentimes it is hard to tell, you know, what someone's saying, especially Bruno Sammartino, who doesn't, he wasn't exactly speaking very loud, he was kind of just, you know, speaking very softly, so it was a little bit hard at times to understand exactly what he was saying.
Hard-hitting, soft-spoken.
Yeah, he's the Bobby Lashley, I guess, of the, you know, the 19-whatever, 70s, or whenever it was he wrestled, I suppose around the 70s, 60s, 70s. He, of course, Bruno Sammartino is famous for being the WWE champion, or at the time it may
for
be...
For a million years.
For 1 million years. No, actually 8 years, which is a WWE record.
That John Cena may break.
John Cena is currently only, you know, 3 months away from breaking, seems like. I mean, just imagine how long, you know, people are kind of complaining about, this is not, you know, we don't want to get off on WWE topics, but just imagine, you know, how long John Cena has been world champion. And I guess, well, imagine how long Bryan Danielson has been world champion. At this point, he had been world champion for, you know, over a year straight, and it seems like forever. I mean, it's hard to imagine someone, you know, that was only about 1/8 of Bruno Sammartino's reign. You know, he stood 7 more years ago without losing a belt.
Yeah, but he probably only wrestled like 20 shows in 8 years or something.
That's what I'm wondering. How many times did he actually defend the belt? I'm not really really sure on how this is. I haven't really looked at the number of title defenses he made. I'm sure that the number of shows that the WWE ran back then was probably a great deal, you know, smaller than what they do now. I'm sure they didn't run shows probably even every week. You know, maybe he only defended the belt once every couple of months, more like boxing or something. So then that would make more, you know, that would, you could kind of see that more now. I mean, I don't think there's any way you could have an 8-year title reign in pro wrestling today. People just absolutely would not stand for it. But, you know, regardless, Bruno Sammartino is, I guess, a wrestling legend. I've never actually seen the man wrestle.
You remember what he told the guy later on, that he wrestled for Noah? And I thought Noah was only, like, around for, like, 8 years or something like that.
Well, it's not even been around that long. He did say that.
No, he wrestled for that belt, man. He said that. He told Marufuji that.
Well, listen,
that's sick. Hold on. Marufuji don't even know what he's saying, so I'm trying to talk himself up to Marufuji.
He did later on cutting a backstage promo with Naomichi Marufuji, who is the GHC World Champion.
Where he said he'd won that Zag belt.
And he'd said he had wrestled for that title before, which he, of course, is probably mistaking. Pro Wrestling Noah's not even around since, I think, maybe 2000 and 2001, 2000, something like that. So, obviously, Bruno Sammartino did not wrestle for that title. Perhaps he wrestled for maybe the All Japan world title, which is kind of where Pro Wrestling Noah was, because it's an offshoot of All Japan, but it's not the same belt, so he was mistaken there, and he also, you know, said that it was, you know, good to see a guy like Bryan Danielson, because he's a really great world champion. But anyway, so the fans were really respectful of Sammartino, but then as everyone was leaving, there was also guys from Pro Wrestling Noah other than Kenta and Marufuji. One guy's name is Taichi Morishima. You have to excuse me if I butchered that. I think it's Taichi Morishima.
What?
And Samoa Joe, these two men, which this Taichi Morishima looks basically like I will refer to him as Japanese Joe because he looks basically
like
Samoa Joe.
He's in the same physical condition.
He's got a very similar frame to Samoa Joe, only Japanese Joe has long blonde hair. But yeah, these two men, they kind of got into it, and the locker room had to separate the two men, and the crowd was absolutely going bananas for it, so they definitely want to see these two men lock it up sometime down the road, and I have no doubt that they will, in fact, have a match sometime in the future. Moving on, though, to the second match on the card was probably, in my opinion, the weakest match, as Adam Pearce took on Delirious. What do you think about this match between Adam Pearce and Delirious?
I'm personally a fan of Delirious, but I don't know. Adam Pearce didn't really show me too much in this. Although, I gotta say, after recently watching Death for Dishonor, maybe I'm starting to change a little bit on Adam Pearce. But that's only because he's in a match where he's fucking swinging a chair or something. Okay, when he's just getting there wrestling Delirious, it ain't that great. It wasn't that great of a match.
Yeah, I'm very high on Delirious. I think he's very cool. I like his gimmick. It's very interesting. And that's the thing with ROH. You got a lot of guys that really don't have any gimmick. They're just good wrestlers. And then that works fine for ROH, but it's kind of refreshing to see someone every now and then.
But then
ROH
you'll have people
really
that think Delirious is stupid, and they hate him.
Well, they're stupid. Okay, because Delirious is very hilarious. He's delirious and hilarious at the same time. And he's also a very good professional wrestler. And Delirious, we'll talk more about him on the next show, because the next show was a very big night for him. But this was not a very good match, and it's mainly because the heart of the problem with this match was definitely Adam Pearce. I'm not a big fan of Adam Pearce at all. He doesn't have a great physique. He doesn't have, he's perhaps a solid technical wrestler, as an old-school technical wrestler, but I don't think he really keeps up with the younger generation, the more fast-paced generation that, you know, that ROH is. He just really sticks out as not being the kind of guy I want to see in ROH personally. So, you know, perhaps he did do a lot for ROH back during the CZW feud, but now that feud's over, I don't really want to see him wrestling that much.
He got a friggin' H carved in his head.
Well, you know, that's too bad for him, you know, but, you know, I don't want to see him carving, his ugly mug into my retinas. By having to watch him on an ROH DVD. So this match is probably one of the low points of the show, but one of the very few low points, though, because this was a very rock-solid card. Next up was another match that, though not terrible, I think you personally didn't really, was not a very big fan of. That was Jimmy Jacobs, Colt Cabana, and Christopher Daniels in a three-way dance.
Colt, don't get me wrong. Colt Cabana is, an okay wrestler. You know, he's a nice wrestler. He ruins matches with his stupid comedy bullshit. What's he trying to do? Why is he trying to embarrass Christopher Daniels running the match down? Listen, wrestle. Don't do all your gay shit and have a good match. Okay, Daniels can't go in there. What's he going to do? To slap you in the face and say, hey, cut that shit out?
Well, perhaps he should, because I got to kind of agree. I mean, I like Colt Cabana. He's funny. He's, real popular with the fans, and he's got a lot of charisma. But at some point, this whole comedy routine he and Jimmy Jacobs have going with one another that we kind of enjoyed on Glory Bonner Night too, because it was kind of funny. You know, it was alright when they were, messing around with one another. But at this point, it kind of in some ways took away from this match a little bit. And I just, you know, Christopher Daniels, you expect a lot of a guy like Christopher Daniels. He has, you know, had some very good matches in the past, but this match was just not really one of them. And I wasn't all that impressed with this match at all. And part of it, not that these three men couldn't have a good match, but I think it's the whole storyline and the way that the whole Jimmy Jacobs can't really fight Colt Cabana because Lacey won't allow him type storyline caused there to be a lot of just double teaming of Christopher Daniels and things like that, and made it very tough on Christopher Daniels to really, you know, put on a good match. So, again, this, though it wasn't a terrible match, definitely wasn't a high point of the show. But now from this point on, it's pretty much just, you know, all just one good match after another all the way through the end. And just like the matches continue to get better and better as the show progresses. The next match was Homicide and Samoa Joe versus the Briscoes. And this match was, you know, just great. Tremendous. The crowd was, you know, tremendously hot for this match. Homicide and Joe are a bit of a, you know, ROH dream team, and then the Briscoes are obviously both, you know, love the Briscoes.
You know, the Briscoes and Homicide, they got trouble. You know, Homicide spits in Cornette's face. You don't do that. What's Joe coming in here sticking his nose in the Briscoes' business? You better man up, boy. You don't. What's he thinking about?
Well, Joe will definitely man up. He has no problem manning up. He just has a general dislike for Jay and Mark Briscoe.
He's just like Jimmy Ray, boy, you come in here getting our business. You better man up. Joe better do the same thing.
Well, Joe, he did man up. He and Homicide, you know.
Did they win? Oh.
Well, we'll talk about that later now, won't we? You'll just have to, if anyone out there, you know, hasn't seen the show and wants to find out for themselves, you definitely want to watch this match because it is hard-hitting, it is fast-paced, the crowd, as I said, is very hot for this match, and, I mean, it really was a tremendous matchup, and one of many, many more to come from these four men. So I think that's, you know, at least a 4-star match. I mean, this was a very good match. I really enjoyed it. The next match is Austin Aries and Roderick Strong defending their ROH World Tag Team Championships that they've had for, I think, 8 months against
one of the biggest heels. They took these to Pro Wrestling Noah and truly made them World Tag Team Titles, Shane.
They turned the ROH Tag Team Titles into the ROH World Tag Team Championships by successfully defending them, not in Pro Wrestling Noah, but in fact in Dragon's Gate in Japan.
Well, it's all the same. It's just all those flippity-floppity Japanese guys. I can't tell the difference.
If you defended the belts in Canada, would that make them world championships?
I don't know.
I mean, or does it have to be on the other side of the world, you know?
Do you think that I just kind of downgraded all Japanese wrestling with calling them all, they're kind of all the same, all those flippity-floppity guys?
You just made a broad generalization about Japanese wrestlers. They like to flippity-flop around.
Yeah. They don't go subscribe to the JBL school of wrestling. Nothing pretty. They just get in there and beat you up.
Yeah, I mean they definitely they're not, you know, Dragon's Gate. I don't think Deuce and Domino would really fit in well because Dragon's Gate is more about you know, doing flashy moves, entertaining people instead of just getting there and beating people up like the APA used to do. But we're not talking about SmackDown here. We're talking about Ring of Honor. And we're talking about the Kings of Wrestling, Chris Hero and Claudio Castagnoli, taking on Austin Aries and Roderick Strong for their ROH Tag Team titles. Are there two bigger heels when it comes to tag teams than Chris Hero and Claudio Castagnoli?
I wouldn't think so. I mean, maybe the Briscoe brothers. But
the Briscoes, I think they're still pretty well liked by the fans just because They're great wrestlers.
And that's why I like the Briscoes, by Hero the way. Cash. They have a good match. The fans try to cheer them, and they just flip them off and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, not that Hero and Castagnoli are bad wrestlers, but they just, I mean, it wouldn't matter if, how good of a match that they're wrestling. The fans would never acknowledge that to Chris Hero because of the whole CZW-ROH feud. I mean, they would boo this man, you know, telling that he, you know, effing sucks right through his face as much as they can, throw toilet paper in his face. You know, I mean, it was just tremendous heat from the crowd. And then obviously, as I said, they, you know, are actually pretty good wrestlers. And obviously, Aries and Strong are a phenomenal tag team. So this was a good match that, again, had a ton of heat from the crowd. Did you also, I guess you agree that, you know, you enjoyed this tag team title matchup?
Definitely. That's one of the best. I don't know if it was better than Joe and the Briscoes and all that, but it was definitely one of the better matches on the show.
Absolutely. I kind of like Joe Homicide versus the Briscoes a little bit more as a match, but this was definitely a top-notch match that also had, you know, a lot of heat from the crowd. And we'll talk about who won it later on in the spoiler section, but right now we're going to move on to a match that, I mean, this is a match that, if it wasn't for the main event, I think could have been a match of the night on just about any other ROH event out there. As Naomichi Marufuji, the GHC Heavyweight Championship, or Heavyweight Champion, defended his belt against Nigel McGuinness, and I'm giving it 5 stars in my book, a 5-star heavyweight title match.
Oh, what are you talking? I don't like guys that no sell moves, man. I mean, come on, who is this guy? Sting.
Okay,
who is this guy? Sting.
I incredibly marked out for Marufuji. So let's talk about some of the crazy stuff that happened in this match. Marufuji, of course, he likes to utilize the sliced bread number 2, which it has some Japanese name that I don't know what it is. But he gave him a freaking sliced bread number 2 from the ring apron to the concrete floor. I mean, it was absolutely insane.
It had carpet over.
Wow, that carpet, that makes a huge difference. Yeah. You know, that carpeting really padded that blow. I mean, are you kidding me? Are you freaking kidding me? A freaking sliced bread number 2 to the outside? I mean, and then there was obviously a lot of other, you know,
what
great
about
Nigel
the,
spots.
The Tower of London that was no sold into a sliced bread number 2? Yeah.
I like that a lot, too. I mean,
I wasn't trying to riff it. I was saying it was cool.
Nigel, he did the Tower of London. Marufuji just totally no-sells it. Gets up, gives him a sliced bread number 2, and then both men are out, you know, and the announcers played it off as Marufuji was just able to block out the pain long enough to give him the sliced bread number 2. Now, it was totally unrealistic, you know, hell, but
was it
still very cool nonetheless, and the crowd, you know, went wild for
Wasn't there a spot where he goes to do the little handstand in the corner and he just gets kicked real stiff right in the face?
I'm sure there was. There was also some other, you know, very stiff clotheslines from McGuinness. I love where the little movie does where, you know, it looks like he's going to flip out through the middle ropes and then he springs back in and bam, hits him with a huge, you know, lariat. He hit a very stiff one against Marufuji and also gave him a very stiff. He crushed him across the top ropes, Marufuji, that is, and gave him a, you know, McGuinness gave him a very stiff lariat off the ropes like that. And this was just a very hard-hitting match, back and forth the entire time. The crowd, again, was very hot for it. And like I said, 5 stars in my book, and it would have been the match of the night on just about any ROH event, but I don't know if I can give it that honors, just because the next match, the main event, was also so great. Do you have anything else to add about Marufuji versus McGuinness?
Marufuji, sometimes, you know, I don't like that they bring these Japanese wrestlers, and you know, it's almost kind of like they're putting them over the Ring of Honor talent and all that. But this guy's definitely very talented, and definitely want to see him back again.
Absolutely. I would love to see Marufuji back in an ROH ring. There are some guys that, you know, I'm just not, you know, really that crazy about. The last two guys that were from Pro Wrestling Noah to wrestling Ring of Honor were Goshi Ozaki and Sua. I think Goshi Ozaki was alright. I enjoyed his match.
What about Sua?
Well, let me finish talking about Goshi Ozaki. I think his match with BJ Whitmer from Anarchy in the UK was an alright match. But Sua, I gotta say, I wasn't really a big fan of his at all. Maybe he's a good wrestler, but I just didn't really see it. But on the other hand, though, I think Marufuji and Kenta are both phenomenal wrestlers. And, you know, I think they're both going to be on my list of, you know, top five favorite visiting talents to the Ring of Honor ring. So let's move on to the much, much, much anticipated World Heavyweight title match between Bryan Danielson and Kenta. Is there any doubt that this was a five-star matchup?
No, I would say there's no doubt to that.
Hard-hitting, fast-paced. Crowd was, you know, blowing the roof off the Manhattan Center. Of course, Bryan Danielson had just a few weeks earlier had torn some ligaments, I believe, in his shoulder. And Kenta, for the large portion of this match, stiffly worked over his shoulder, including putting him in Fujiwara arm bars, slamming it into the guardrail, doing everything he could to legitimately try to make Bryan Danielson tap and, you know, legitimately scream out of the ROH world title.
This is going to make it sound like wrestling's fake, which, you know, it is, but wasn't he concerned that he might actually hurt the man?
I don't know, but, I mean...
Well, you're like, hey, what is this, some kind of... fake sport. It's like, oh, you might hurt him. Let's just go ahead and not work him over very hard.
I think this is a huge credit to Bryan Danielson that he did allow, you know, his shoulder to be worked over so stiffly, knowing that it was, you know, I mean, you knew it was a legitimate injury, and it just makes you really appreciate Bryan Danielson and what kind of a wrestler he is, that he allowed Kenta to work it over in the manner that he did, knowing that it had to be legitimately hurting him. There's just no way it could not have been, you know, hurting him. Even if he did have, you know, some sort of cortisone shot or something before the match, it still had to be killing him. Obviously, there was this, again, hard-hitting. Kenta is known for his stiff strikes. So is Danielson. Danielson has won matches, and he pulled out, you know, those rapid elbow strikes that has knocked people out before. He pulled them out against Kenta, and at one point it looked like Kenta was going to be put out by these stiff strikes, and he was able to power his way out of it. And I believe he actually hit the go to sleep. Now the question is, did he win with the go to sleep? Well, you either have to watch Glory Bonner Night 2 or listen later on in the podcast when we talk about who won these matches and what we thought about the winner of these matches. But yeah, Kenta Bryan Danielson, 5-star match. Overall, the show was very well put together and one of the best ROH shows I've seen. Anything else you want to add about Bryan Danielson versus Kenta?
Just that, you know, Kenta really, before that, I hadn't really seen a lot of him, so, I mean, I kind of liked him, but after that, he made me, if we could actually included him on my top five wrestlers, he'd definitely been right up there. I definitely love this guy now.
I agree with that. So, overall, for Glory Bonner Night 2, on a scale of 1 to 5, how would you rank Glory Bonner Night 2? Again, if you're a fan of the, or listen to the No Gimmicks Needed podcast, we do a similar scale for the television shows that the WWE and TNA produce and the pay-per-views that WWE and TNA produce. But of course, we hold Ring of Honor to a little bit higher standards, because if we compared it on the same scale Ring of Honor would be getting fives every show. So, on the higher standards that we hold Ring of Honor to, what would you give Glory of Honor Night 2?
Well, if we're going to hold it to, that higher type of standard, I really can't see us getting a five. So I'm going with a four.
I agree with that. As much as I would like to give it a five, and I think if I give it a five, no one would argue me, that point. The thing is, it's kind of like if you give it a five, and then some, you're not really. I reserve a five for the perfect show. And I don't know if there has ever been a perfect show out there. It's kind of like, this is sort of a sports analogy, but in the NBA dunk contest, you see people giving out tens a lot on dunks. So when somebody pulls out something even crazier than that, you still just give them a 10, even though it was clearly better. So I like to try to reserve a 5 for something that I just think was top-notch from top to bottom. Now, like we said, there was two matches that weren't, really kind of up to the same standard as the other ones. The Adam Pearce Delirious match and that three-way. We weren't really big fans of either one of those matches, though they weren't terrible, either one. But I think that's what the only thing holding this card back from being a 4, or maybe being a 5, I mean, it's definitely a 4 at least. And I think it's, even though Glory of Honor Night 1 also got a 4, I think this show is probably a better show. And if you could only buy one of these DVDs one night of the Glory of Honor, I would definitely recommend Night 2, because I think it was, the better night overall. So we'll go with a 4 out of 5 for Glory of Honor Night 2. And I think you would also agree that you would definitely recommend people to buy Glory of Honor Night 2 if they're looking for an ROH DVD to get them started in ROH wrestling.
Definitely.
Right, I totally
you know what would be cool
agree with
just,
that.
Why doesn't Blockbuster get like Ring of Honor DVDs? Because they should. That would be pretty
badass.
That
would be cool if more major carriers, had ROH DVDs for rent. It would obviously increase ROH popularity, and people wouldn't have to spend $20 a pop on ROH DVDs. It might have cut down on the number of people that pirate DVDs. If they could actually just rent them at Blockbuster, it'd be pretty easy because couple bucks, what's some ROH, definitely would be worth it. They do have some wrestling DVDs, obviously. They have, like, some WWE stuff, but I've never seen any ROH. I don't even know if very many major stores carry ROH DVDs. I know, like, Walmart and things like that don't. Maybe some of the video stores carry ROH DVDs, but pretty much the only place you can get ROH DVDs are online at ROHwrestling.com. So, yeah, I mean, that would be cool, though, I agree, if Blockbuster did have Ring of Honor. So, one more show that we're going to talk about on this edition of the podcast is Survival of the Fittest 2006. Survival of the Fittest, how this show works for anyone who doesn't follow ROH or has never seen a Survival of the Fittest tournament.
This is a fitness contest. Where they run on treadmills and
pretty much they do a body mass index of all of the ROH wrestlers, and whoever is the leanest and most fit wins. So it's a very interesting contest to have the wrestlers measured and weighed and their fitness tested. Of course, no, that's the lamest joke we've ever heard, and the lamest joke we've ever told on a podcast before, I think, for what a show is all about. Actually, Survival of the Fittest works like this. There are a series of qualifying matches, and the winner goes on to the main event, which is a elimination-style match, and whoever wins the main event, whoever wins the elimination-style main event is the person who is crowned Survival of the Fittest. And it's sort of like, I guess, a King of the Ring type thing. Previous winners include Bryan Danielson and Roderick Strong, and those guys, obviously, it has helped catapult their career, you know, to bigger and better things. So, that's what Survival of the Fittest is all about. However, though, overall, I would say that I was kind of disappointed with the show.
I can understand, though. I mean, if you're going to wrestle more than one match that night, and if, you know, you don't want to use all your stuff in the earlier matches, these first matches are going to kind of suck, really. You know, you're just going to get in there and just kind of do enough to make it go long enough, but you not do much at all.
Yeah, the problem with the format is, of course, there's a 20-minute time limit on all qualifying matches, and as we said, once you win, you qualify for a match later on. Now, obviously, if you went out there and just pulled out all your stops and just, you know, went balls to the walls for 20 minutes, which is, you have to do that to a certain degree, I guess, if you want to win, because if there is a time limit draw on your match, both men fail to qualify. There's no, you know, overtime, no tiebreakers, so you just both, you know, fail to, you know, advance. But if you do wear yourself out, you know, early in the match, you got to save something, I guess, for later on. At least the winner does. So that's part of the problem, along with the 20-minute time limit, with the qualifying matches for the Survival of the Fittest tournament. Also, the crowd in Cleveland, I just don't think it was nearly as hot as the crowd was in New York. Not as in, you know, the women in Cleveland are ugly, which they may be. I'm not talking about their physical appearance. I'm talking about, obviously, how hot they were as far as popping the wrestlers in the matches. It just seemed like they were sitting on their hands a little bit, and maybe if, you know, they would have, they could have helped these matches along a little bit by, you know, getting up a little bit more for the matches.
There's something about Ohio fans. I think this last show we got done, we're watching, was in Dayton, and they weren't that hot either, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Ohio fans, you know, I don't know, though. Like I said, though, some of these matches just weren't as good as good as they could have been if it weren't in this, you know, in this format. Because there's some good matches on paper here, but again, like I said, with these, you know, extenuating circumstances of the Survival of the Fittest format, it does hold those matches back a little bit. And let's start talking about some of those matches. The opening match was a match, I think, that was probably one of the better matches of these opening round qualifiers. It is Matt Sydal versus Davey Richards. Again, a good way to start off the show. We just said on the previous show, Glory Bonner Night 2, that you want to start it out with fast-paced, exciting wrestlers and an exciting match. The last show started off with Jack Evans and Davey Richards. This one's starting off with a high flyer in Matt Sydal and Davey Richards, who is the hard-hitting young stud of Ring of Honor. And I think, like I said, they put on one of
this
the better
actually,
qualifiers. It was actually a good way to start off the show.
I was going to say, we just got them burying the qualifying matches, but this one actually wasn't that bad.
Yeah, like I said, it was a good way to start off the show. And Matt Sydal, he's obviously a very talented wrestler, very talented high flyer, one of my favorite guys in ROH. And Davey Richards is a very up-and-coming guy. We've already, you know, praised Davey Richards a lot earlier on when we were talking about his match with Jack Evans. So both of these men are guys, I think, who are the future of Ring of Honor. And, you know, they put on a very, you know, solid and very good opening match. However, the next match wasn't quite as good. Again, you have two talented wrestlers, two wrestlers that we really like a lot, but it seems like they are maybe holding back just a little bit. And again, the crowd just all together wasn't really that into this match, and it was Delirious versus Jimmy Rave. I really like Jimmy Rave. I'm a fan of Jimmy Rave. I think he's a talented wrestler. He's a huge heel right now. You know, fans love to throw toilet paper at him. But his match here with Delirious, I don't know. It was just kind of lacking overall, I thought. Would you agree? What's your opinion of this match?
I agree with that, really. I don't know. I mean, just all the qualifiers, really. I don't know. It just seemed like these guys were just trying to save something.
Yeah, I think that, again, that's probably part of the reason why some of these weren't as good as they really could have been. The next match was, again, another match that looked really good on paper, but in execution was a little bit lacking. Austin Aries versus Christopher Daniels. Now, it's worth mentioning that Austin Aries was wearing a thrown-together ensemble. He even made comment of it. He grabs the mic and he says, "You may be wondering what the hell Austin Aries is wearing. Well, you know, they lost my bags, the airlines did, so I had to borrow, you know, some, you know, boots off of so-and-so, and, you know."
I remember he had something from Bobby Dempsey.
Elbow pad from Bobby Dempsey.
Man, that elbow pad
that's probably why
big,
it was six sizes too, you know, that's probably why it was six sizes too big for him. So he was wearing a thrown-together ensemble, but it really wasn't that bad. It was like kind of a black-and-white deal. Not really Austin Aries, but not really that bad either. Much better than what Bryan Danielson ends up wearing later on in this card, but we'll talk about that in a minute. He takes on Christopher Daniels. Again, like I said, this match looked really good on paper, and it was a decent match, but overall wasn't that, you know, crazy about it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Daniels has got a kind of this trend here of matches that just ain't been that great. This one,
we have a bit of a cold spell.
This one is certainly no different. It wasn't that special. Again, you know, maybe the whole format kind of, you know, is leading to this. But really, I mean, if they're going to have, if they're going to wrestle again, you know, they can't go out there and, you know, wear themselves out and stuff. It's kind of opening matches, so it didn't go very long, and then there just wouldn't much happen.
I agree. The next match was actually another pretty decent qualifier. It was a tag team qualifier. So that allowed the men, you know, I would think, to go a little bit more all out because it is tag team and they don't have to wrestle the entire match. It was J. Mark Briscoe versus Homicide and Roderick Strong. This matchup wasn't that bad. I didn't think it was actually pretty good and was a little bit refreshing because the matches, the two previous ones, not counting Sydal David Richards, had been a little bit slow, and the crowd hadn't really got into it as much. But overall, I think this match was nowhere near a Briscoes versus Homicide and Samoa Joe match.
Yeah, definitely. It wasn't that good. It wasn't as good as that match, but, you know, it was definitely one of the better qualifiers for this, and very watchable and enjoyable.
Yeah. The next qualifier was Bryan Danielson versus Samoa Joe. Now, these men had already wrestled to a 60-minute time limit draw about a month earlier at Epic Encounter 2. So,
you always like to try and bring up the point that Joe had him choked out and he was going to tap or something like that.
Yeah, he would have won the Epic Encounter 2 if there had been a no time limit match. Of course, it was a 60-minute time limit, and Danielson got saved by the bell. Pretty much the same thing I think that happened here, only this time it was a 20-minute time limit, so I really had pretty much no hopes of this match actually, you know, making it all the way through.
A 20-minute match and Danielson's still not out of the headlock phase, is he?
Yeah, 20 minutes in, you know, Danielson,
he's got that reverse chin lock.
He's just now rolled into the ring and began to actually try to grapple with you a little bit. But, again, I actually don't want to give any spoilers away, so, you know, as I said, I didn't have very high hopes for it making it all the way. But you never know what. You'll have to watch the show or, again, listen later on in the podcast to see what exactly happened. Which this, I suppose this is going to make for a pretty interesting discussion of the actual main event if we don't tell what happens. I guess we'll have to just discuss the main event of Survival of the Fittest in the spoiler section, because we can't exactly, you know, review the main event if we don't tell you who actually is in it. But before we get to that, there was one other match on the DVD. Chris Hero and Claudio Castagnoli versus Colt Cabana and Jimmy Jacobs. What do you think about this match?
It was okay. Again, I mean, I've suddenly turned into a... I'm not a big fan of Colt Cabana. I mean...
Yeah, the antics between him and Jimmy Jacobs, while funny at times, you know, sometimes you just want to see a serious wrestling match. And if you compare this match to some of the other tremendous wrestling tag team matches that we have seen here in ROH, it kind of leaves you a little bit, you know, feeling disappointed and a little bit lacking.
Yeah, I would definitely agree 100% with you on that one.
Yeah, so that is part of the problem with the team of Colt Cabana and Jimmy Jacobs is they're really not a actual tag team. They're more of just they're kind of a tag team. If I want to equate this to something in mainstream wrestling, like the Paparazzis were of Austin Starr and Alex Shelley, they kind of worked against each other at the same time that they were trying to team with one another. So, you know, that's kind of the problem with those two men. So, other than that, I guess there's really not a lot we can say without spoiling this event for us. Not for us, we've already seen it, but for anyone who hasn't seen it, we, you know, can't really go any further into the discussion of it or giving it a review, or at least a numerical value. So you can tell so far from what we've said kind of a general idea of what we think about the card, and we'll give you a our review score in the spoiler section of the show. But for right now, if anyone out there, like I said, who doesn't want any spoilers and who's thinking about whether or not they should purchase Survival of the Fittest 2006, I would say that unless you just want to see it all, you know, you want to see all of ROH, this would not be one of the DVDs I would suggest buying. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, unless you just got, you know, money and an option for you and you can just watch everything. But if, you know, if you're on a budget, if you're actually concerned about, you know, getting the most value, as Donald Trump would say, I wouldn't get this one.
Yeah, if you want the most bang for your buck, go with Glory Bonner Night 2, Glory Bonner Night 1, or as we talked about on the last podcast, Univibe is a pretty good show. This show would not be one I would buy, but if you know somebody that's got it, it's worth a watch. Or like I said, if your money's not an option, you know, shoot, go for it. But yeah, that pretty much wraps up all we can talk about Survival of the Fittest right now without going into any spoilers. And that also pretty much wraps up everything that there is to talk about on this edition of Podcast of Honor. So for those of you who don't want any spoilers, we'll go ahead and say goodbye to you for right now and close off this edition of the podcast. For those of you who don't care about spoilers, who have already watched these DVDs, stick around because we're going to finish talking about Survival of the Fittest and tell you who won at Glory Bonner Night 2 and tell you what we thought about those winners. So we're going to go ahead and close it off now. Stick around if you want to hear some of the spoilers in the spoiler section. So for Shane and Afton, this has been Podcast of Honor Episode 2. Thank you for downloading. And we're back in the spoiler section. So, of course, anybody who didn't want to hear anything about the spoilers hopefully has turned their turn this podcast off right now. But let's get into actually some of the winners of these matches. We'll go ahead and jump back and talk about Glory Bonner Night 2 first. And we'll go through these kind of quickly and give our opinions. Davey Richards defeated Jack Evans in the opener of Glory Bonner Night 2, which, you know, I would have no problem with either one of these guys winning.
Yeah, I don't really have a problem with Davey Richards winning.
Okay, not a lot to say about that match. You know, it was just kind of an exhibition of two good wrestlers. Adam Pearce defeated Delirious, unfortunately, with the help of my anti-guy, Shane Hagendorn. Hagendorn came out with a set of brass knucks, popped Delirious with them, and that allowed Adam Pearce to hit a jumping pile driver for the victory.
This is a very old school finish, you know, with the brass knucks.
Yeah, classic finish. Pearce, of course, he's a kiss ass to Commissioner
Jim Cornette,
and Shane Hagendorn is in change a kiss ass to Adam Pearce. So it's just a big chain of people kissing each other's asses. With Pierce Hagendorn and Jim Cornette. Next, the three-way match, Jimmy Jacobs surprisingly beat Colt Cabana and Christopher Daniels, and he did so via a low blow to Colt Cabana, which did not at all sit well with Lacey. You were, of course, I think, very upset about Jimmy Jacobs winning this match, or did you not really care?
Christopher Daniels is a bigger star than both of these guys. I would argue that. Number two, the match just sucked because they were doing stupid comedy shit. So, I mean, yeah, I was kind of pissed that fucking Daniels lost. And, I mean, there wouldn't... Nothing happened in it besides, you know, bullshit.
Yeah. So, God, you're a mark. Well, I won't say that, but, you know, you definitely are a little bit harder on it than I am. I mean, I have no problem with Jimmy Jacobs. It's actually good to see him win one, but, you know, I'm not blowing up because Christopher Daniels didn't win. Anyway, moving on, Homicide and Samoa Joe, of course, Vita J and Mark Briscoe in that and phenomenal tag team matchup. And the stipulation was, of course, if Homicide and Joe didn't win, Homicide wasn't going to get a shot at the world title. His world title match was going to be canceled, so you pretty well knew Homicide and Joe was going to win it, and they did. I don't think you had any problem with that, though, did you?
No. I mean, you kind of know what's going to happen, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of know what's going to happen, but, you know, it was still a phenomenal match anyway, so it's not really much about who wins. It's, you know, it's not about the destination. It's the ride that matters. The next match had a very shocking finish for those people who follow ROH and hadn't already read the spoilers before they had watched the DVD. The Kings of Wrestling put an end to the 8-month-plus title reign of Austin Aries and Roderick Strong with a shot to the injured ribs of Austin Aries, the legitimately injured ribs, with that Halliburton briefcase that Claudio carries with him. And then they did the KRS-1, which, of course, stands for King's Reign Supreme 1, to win the ROH World Tag Team Championship. Were you shocked by this outcome?
Was I shocked? Very much yeah. So. Did I matter? I mean, did I matter, but did I care? definitely, I did not. Wait a minute, this sounds wrong. I mean, I cared. But did I care that they won, you know?
Were you disappointed that they won?
I wasn't disappointed, you know, no.
I mean, you have no problem because with I mean, you're not, like, blowing up that you can't believe the Kings of Wrestling would be allowed to, you know, win the World Tag Team Champions. This is blasphemy to ROH, you know, to see that.
I like the guys. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, I like the Kings of Wrestling a lot, you know, myself too. But like I said, they aren't mega heels, really.
You would have to have them was to be the perfect team to end it too, because Aries and Strong are almost beaten just pretty much everyone in Ring of Honor.
Man,
there was no team left.
Yeah, and I think it got a tremendous heel heat with Claudio and Hero winning this match, and it furthered, you know, their stance as being a you know, tremendous Hill tag team. So I wasn't at all disappointed, but I was a little bit shocked by the victory by Hero and Castagnoli, and a pretty good matchup. Of course, in the next match, Naomichi Marufuji, as you would expect, retained his GHC heavyweight title over Nigel McGuinness. Again, though, I guess you agree, this is one of those matches where, you know, the destination didn't matter. It was a ride that counted.
That sounds like the catchphrase for Destination X or something.
That could be. It could be the catchphrase for Destination X. I should copyright that before TNA steals it. But, I mean, you agree.
Yeah.
You were not at all disappointed, but especially because Marufuji is such a, you know, such a solid wrestler, you know. I had no problem at all with him beating Nigel. And Nigel was one of my favorite ROH guys, you know, now. Because, I mean, he just had a very, you know, Christopher Daniels is in a bit of a slump. And Nigel has really picked up the slack, I guess, if you were talking about just the general, you know, lost and found, if you will, of wrestling goodness. Christopher Daniels has been on the fortunate downside of a couple of, you know, matches, when Nigel has really picked it up and had some very good matches here lately. You know, exceptionally good matches, starting really at Unified and carrying over here to Glory Bonner Night 2. The main event, as we already said, we really enjoyed. And of course, I was glad to see, in a way, Bryan Danielson defeat Kenta, because as I think I've mentioned, if not on this podcast, over on No Gimmicks Needed, that a lot of these Japanese guys are getting pushed very heavily in ROH, and we'll see that more in the future when we talk about future DVD releases. But it's good to see, you know, Bryan Danielson defeat a star as, you know, as big as Kenta is. I mean, Kenta's a major star in Japan, and to see a guy like Bryan Danielson defeat him, when Bryan Danielson is, you know, relatively speaking, unknown to American wrestling fans, outside of, you know, the underground, you know, I guess, fans of ROH wrestling and fans of independent wrestling don't really, are the only ones that really know a whole lot about Bryan Danielson. So it was good to see him defeat Kenta. I mean, anything you want to add about, you know, this, the outcome of this matchup?
Well, them Jets ain't gonna come over here in Pearl Harbor, American champion.
Thank you there, Mark Briscoe. You from Sandy Port, Delaware, or whatever?
Yeah.
I never got that. I mean, they were Confederate flags, yet they're from Delaware, which was a total Union state. I guess they just like the good old South. Or maybe they're originally from the South. I don't really know. But, I was not, you know, no problem with that outcome. On to Survival of the Fittest. The first qualifier, Matt Sydal, defeated Davey Richards to advance to the main event. No problem with that. I like Matt Sydal, and I like Davey Richards, too. If he would have won, I wouldn't have had a problem with it either. Would you agree?
Nah. Well, I mean, both of those could have won the match and have been totally fine. I think they're pretty much on the same level.
Agree totally. Delirious defeated Jimmy Rave. Again, I have no problem with Delirious, but man, Jimmy Rave, when's a guy going to win a match?
I don't think he's won a match since Death Before Dishonor or something.
Yeah, that's when we went back and watched Death Before Dishonor, I was shocked to see the guy actually freaking won a match. You know, I mean, I like Jimmy Ray, but God, the guy's been jobbed out really badly. Austin Aries defeated Christopher Daniels. Of course, there was a big storyline coming in. Aries cut a promo at the beginning of the show talking about how much he, you know, really wanted to win Survival of the Fittest and how close he had come, but had yet to win it. Were you disappointed that he defeated Christopher Daniels?
Personally, I was, but I mean, it makes sense that. They're, you know, they build up the storyline that he had won Survival of the Fittest, but it had been so close, so, you know, you kind of think he'd win the match.
Yeah, I mean, I did too. It's interesting to see how the main event went, though, following that storyline, but we'll talk about that in just a second. Of course, at this point, ROH World Champion Bryan Danielson, we didn't really say that because we didn't want to spoil the ending of Glory Bonner Knight 2, but he, of course, retained the belt. And he did, in fact, go to a 20-minute time limit draw with Samoa Joe.
We didn't see that one coming.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's seen that one coming. I think I actually kind of slipped up and may have, you know, went ahead and said it, but I tried to cover it up earlier for anyone, like I said, who didn't, they didn't want to hear the spoilers. So, I don't know. I don't know if anyone cares about, you know, spoilers or not, but I'm just considerate enough to try to keep it spoiler-free as possible the first time through. Obviously, Chris Hero, Claudio Castagnoli retained the tag team titles over Colt Cabana and Jimmy Jacobs. I've seen this coming, absolutely, because I don't think Cabana and Jacobs were tag team championship worthy. They're barely a tag team at all, let alone, you know, tag team championship material.
Yeah. I agree.
So, let's go ahead and get into the main event. We had the five men that actually made it to the main event, were Jay and Mark Briscoe, Matt Sydal, Delirious, and Austin Aries. The way the match came down was the Briscoes eliminated Austin Aries. Then, at this point, it's basically a tag match. The Briscoes versus Matt Sydal and Delirious. Sydal first eliminates Jay Briscoe, and then Sydal eliminates Mark Briscoe, and then the finals come down to Delirious and Matt Sydal. Overall, though, the entire match was really good. I liked a lot of the wrestling, but I found it a little bit interesting that Austin Aries was the first guy eliminated after this whole story of him, you know, really wanting to win it. I thought he was going to win it. The man who eventually ended up winning it was Delirious, shockingly enough. I guess I was sort of shocked.
I thought him and Sydal totally stole the show when they were the only
No doubt.
Left.
I think the Briscoes, I mean, they're you know, they did a lot of good stuff. I mean, their elimination of Aries was good, and then the what I like to call the tag team portion of the match was good. But the match really, the whole show and the main event was absolutely stolen by Matt Sydal and Delirious. These two men came up together, made a name for they, you know, really arrived in ROH at about the same time, and they, you know, have since, you know, had some classic matches, and they absolutely stole this main event. And this was definitely the match of the night, the main event was. And, you know, it's worth watching it just to see Delirious and Sydal, the two guys who are the future of ROH, going head-to-head. And it's great to see a guy like Delirious, who really, when he came to ROH, was on a tremendous losing streak. The guy didn't win a match for a long time. He was just like a comedy act, you know, opening the shows. And now it since became, you know, a very serious contender. I mean, he won the Survival of the Fittest. And he's a very serious contender now in Ring of Honor. And, you know, like I said earlier, I really like Delirious. I mean, you have anything you want to add about this main event? Do you have anything you want to add about this main event? Going once?
I think I kind of, you know, summed it up. I mean,
are you narcoleptic? Did you fall asleep?
Just stole the show.
Yeah. I think I agree that this match did, this session of the match really stole the show.
I'm talking to you.
Yeah, there must be some kind of horrible delay between me and you or something. Yeah, I mean, I can hear the very bad delay. So, go ahead. I'll go ahead and give my review. And while I'm saying this, you should be hearing what I'm telling you right now. This is kind of a little bit awkward. The horrible time delay. So, I'm going to give Survival the Fittest. I don't know. I'm personally probably only going to give it a 2, I think, out of 5. I thought about giving it a 3, but I don't know. I'm not really that high on Survival the Fittest. Like I said, the main event was good, but I hold things to a really high standard. And if I'm going to give Glory Bonner Night 2 a 4 out of 5. I don't think this was really anywhere near that event. So I'm only going to give Survival of the Fittest a 2 out of 5. And I definitely, like we said earlier before we even got into this match, I totally stick by my statement of this is just a, you know, buy if you want to own it all. You know, money's not an option type thing. Otherwise, you know, you could skip this one or just borrow it off of a buddy if you know someone that's got it. Because, you know, for the budget-conscious ROH viewers, it would not be one I would suggest picking up. What about you? What would you give the Glory or Survival of the Fittest 2006?
Yeah, I'd give it a 3, I think. But I would definitely tell people that if they, you know, couldn't just afford to just buy all the DVDs, that I definitely wouldn't buy this one. I'd wait for something else that's, you know, a lot better.
I agree with that. So that about covers, I guess, Survival of the Fittest. So there you go, Glory of Honor Night 2, Survival of the Fittest 2006. We also covered Afton's top 5 picks for wrestlers, tag teams, and ROH. Next time on the podcast, which we'll hopefully get around to a little bit quicker than we got around doing this podcast, we'll cover our top 5 visiting talents to ROH, both of us will, as well as we'll probably review 2 more DVDs again. We've already watched Motor City Madness. We're going to talk about that, and we hope to finish up Suffocation pretty soon. And we'll probably talk about that as well on the next podcast of Honor. So, I guess that pretty well wraps up Podcast of Honor this week. Is there anything else you would like to add before we close the show?
Stars and bars. Stars and bars.
Pretty much. So, I guess we need to shake hands. The podcast is over. We must uphold the code of honor by shaking hands yet again. And, yeah, that wraps up Podcast of Honor. All you ROH fans, please send in any emails, comments, questions, feedbacks that you may have on this podcast to podcastofhonor@gmail.com or leave a comment on the blog. It's very simple. Just underneath the post that we'll make on the blog for this edition of the podcast, just click on comments, leave one very easily. And if you do, either email us or leave a comment. We will read it on the next podcast. If not, that's okay. We'll still do another podcast anyway. So, thanks for downloading, and we'll see you next time.